This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Let's say there's a ballot with several candidates seeking the same seat, and you like most of them, but you can only pick one because that's what the rules say. When that happens, the vote in a multi-candidate race is split, and the outcome often is that the candidate you least liked wins. This is called vote splitting. Phenomenon that happens when a race attracts at least three candidates who have similar positions or maybe similar demographics. This makes it attractive for a contrasting candidate to benefit from the divided vote and prevail. It's happened time and again across the nation and here in Arizona. Think Paul Gosar. He emerged from an eight-candidate field in 2010 to win the GOP primary in a heavily Republican district. It cemented his standing as an incumbent, and he hasn't lost since. There's a move afoot to stop vote splitting by introducing what is called approval voting, a system where voters could vote for all of the candidates in a given race who appeal to them. And they could do that without having to rank them. Welcome to The Gaggle, a politics podcast by the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com. I'm Mary Jo Pitzel. I cover state politics and policy. Ron Hansen is out today. In this episode, we're examining the effect of vote splitting, the potential issues it can cause, and some of the unintended consequences of the practice. We'll also talk about the related practice of ticket splitting, which factored prominently in the 2022 general election. To explain all this, we've reached out to the Center for Election Science, a national nonpartisan nonprofit focused on voting reform. Joining us via Zoom from the center are Nina Taylor, the organization's CEO, and Chris Raleigh, Director of Advocacy and Communication, and a specialist in campaign management. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, and thanks for inviting us.
So first off, let's get some definitions. Give our listeners a plain English description of vote splitting and how it works.
Sure. There is a difference between split ticket voting and vote splitting. And so vote splitting occurs when you have multiple similar candidates that have their support split among the same voter base, making it more likely that a dissimilar and sometimes less popular candidate will win. Split ticket voting refers to a situation in which voters cast ballots for candidates from different political parties for various offices in the same election. And so an example would be a voter might choose a Democrat candidate for president, but then elect a Republican candidate for governor and mayor. And so both occur in our current voting system, which is called plurality voting. And when it comes to vote splitting, it really does plague American elections, and it has throughout times. And in recent years, congressional primaries have become more and more crowded. And the more candidates who enter the race, the greater the opportunity for vote splitting, especially when those candidates share a similar policy, ideology, as well as background.
So is split ticket voting a form of vote splitting?
So one is a scenario, and one is what voters choose to do. So vote splitting has these three ingredients. You have to have lots of candidates. Second thing is, some of those candidates need to be the same. And the third thing is you can only choose one. In that scenario, almost more times than not, what happens is the candidates that are similar, voters put some on A and some on B, and they both do worse. So if someone was going to get 60%, and then my twin brother comes, we're both going to get 30%. It nearly always happens. And it could be we could be from the same town. We could have the same views. Doesn't matter. Voters are used to maybe hearing stealing votes from each other. The last thing that happens more times than not, the winner gets less than 50%. So when you have a lot of people and kind of people are putting them in different buckets, you're going to get someone less than 50%. So you need all those three ingredients. But when you have all those three ingredients, you're almost guaranteed to get the outcomes that I was explaining before. Vote splitting is not good. Split ticketing is what voters choose to do. So if you feel very strongly that a Republican should be president, but you really like the Democratic candidates for mayor or Senate, or maybe you like the Republican nominees for Congress, you could split ticketing is a phenomenon where voters, it almost seems weird in 2024. How could people do that? It's actually, that's how elections used to be. Voters used to split tickets at a far higher rate in the past than in the 2010s and the 2020s. And part of the reason for that is, you know, people used to say all politics is local. That's something we've all heard, right? What happens is, and I've seen this as a campaign manager working at the local level and at the congressional level in the past, is that even those things get nationalized, right? What is happening for mayor? You used to say maybe, hey, I like the mayor. The mayor's a Democrat. I'm a Republican, but the mayor's doing a good job. Now, today, even the mayor, you say, the mayor's a Democrat. And so maybe we need a Republican mayor. Whereas in the past, the local ties mattered more to a voter for those lower races than maybe they did for president.
So what's the origin of vote splitting? Was this something that grew up organically? Was it, you know, cooked up in some smoky back room at a political headquarters?
I don't think that it was kind of cooked up. I think it's just the outcome of the current system that we have when it comes to running our elections. The entire, you know, choose one candidate on the ballot. And as we expand in kind of our belief systems and how people are voting, and to Chris's point, you know, folks aren't voting just down ballot for their party. Sometimes I look at the qualifications. Do I trust that this person will have my interests in mind? And so the way that the current system is set up, vote splitting happens. But vote splitting in itself is just bad for democracy. It undermines the very reasons that we have elections. And that's why we believe that while it's hard to see and that it's often not named, or actually the emphasis isn't placed on vote splitting as it should, it's the root of many of our problems, especially in elections. You end up with these spoilers, right? So you have winners where the community gets this winner that actually doesn't represent them, that doesn't represent their interests. And then the vote splitting could happen where, you know, you might knock out the candidates that really do represent your interest. And then that third candidate that didn't come to your community to speak to you, doesn't understand the issues that are so much more important to you, ends up winning with a very slim margin of the vote. And so it's something that I think we need to address. One of the reasons that I joined the Center for Election Science is the fact that we need reform when it comes to the way that we elect our officials. We lobby and advocate for approval voting. So you're able to select all of the candidates that you like and none of the ones that you don't, rather than having to almost force your hand in voting for a single candidate.
Do you have examples of vote splitting here in Arizona?
What makes Arizona interesting is you have vote splitting on both sides of the aisle here, which is not necessarily the case in every single state. Imagine someone in Congress where you just say, how the heck did that person get in there? And I like to have the audience imagine that before I mention the people that I mentioned. So some of the folks that have big name ones in the last 14 years, Paul Gosar, 2010, he had 8 candidates, got 31% of the vote. And Ruben Gallego, 2014 for Congress, 4 candidates, got just under 50% of the vote. Sinema in 2012, 3 candidates, 40% of the vote. Eli Crane in 2022, 7 candidates, 34% of the vote. Andy Biggs, 2016, 4 candidates, 30% of the vote. And then Carrie Lake, 2022, 4 candidates, 48% of the vote. And I don't know the aspects of every single one of these races, but why it's interesting to think about this is I guarantee that there was a solid coalition probably against each one of these candidates in each one of their races, Democrat, Republican. That coalition can't solidify, right? If there is an anti this candidate coalition, there's usually five of those candidates and then the one candidate who's hard to beat. So when we think about vote splitting, when we think about partisanship, when we think, how the heck did Congress break down so badly? Go back to the source, go back to the origin, go back to the race where they could be beat, which was these primaries. And in those races, you'll see, oh, wow, maybe there was an anti-coalition against this person, but there were nine of them, seven of them, and there was the one candidate. So, and this happens all over the place. And it happened. And also look at the presidential races in 2016 and 2020. Both candidates, the for 2024, that was their kind of origin, right? Was those races. Look at the first primaries for both Trump and Biden. They won the first contest with less than 40% of the vote. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but remember, there were 17 and 18 candidates each in those races. It's a mathematical fact. More people voted against Trump and Biden in those early races than voted for them. And that's the core of why vote splitting is bad. 60% of people voted for something else, but 40% of people get what they want. And that's where we kind of want to leave you all with is like, is that right? Is that how it should be? Should that be a tactic? Should dividing and adding more people, more candidates to the race to split the vote, should that be a tactic? Or should it be a game of addition of voters? Who can get the most voters? Who can be the most approved? Who has the broadest approval? And those are the people. And Mary Jo, you had a question about getting the people in power to like this. What I'll say to that is Democrats want the best Democrat and Republicans want the best Republican. And I feel pretty strongly that whatever party figures this out first, that this is a way to do that, they'll have an advantage for a while. Tell them both of them right now. You know, here's fair warning. But if you did approval voting to pick your candidate and your nominee had 70% approval and theirs was some person who got 30% and some demolition derby primary, you know, who do we think would win, right? And the last thing I want to leave you with is there was a candidate in St. Louis. So they in St. Louis, what they used to do is they used to do the system we have, which is plurality voting. And there was a candidate called Tashara Jones. So Tashara Jones runs for mayor in 2017. There are multiple Black candidates. One white candidate wins. We have nothing against her besides that she won with vote splitting, right? She got 32%. Tashara Jones got 30% of the vote. 2021, the city of St. Louis has approval voting. Tashara Jones, same candidate, running again, gets 57% approval. She didn't do anything magic, but the voters could finally say what they wanted. There was vote splitting, and it was impacting who won, and it was making the city even more divided than it already was. It's a very divided place already. And so why we like approval voting is we've seen what it does. We've seen like the hope, and most people walked away from that election going like, yeah, that sounds about right. Right? Wouldn't we as Americans kill to have that kind of like reaction? Whereas instead of it's like, nope, we gotta fight a war to protest these results. That's what we're trying to get across is like, we want the elections to feel like they pick the right person for the community. And we want to incentivize those candidates to go across the community and not stay in their bubbles, whether that bubble's ideology or geography or anything else.
Look at vote splitting, right? And so in 2022, it impacted Arizona's Senate race as well as four congressional districts. And we actually have a vote splitting map on our website, elections.science.org. And I'd also like to encourage listeners to look into approval voting and other reform methods and start asking questions and getting involved in town halls around reform and learn more about how voting reform can enhance your voting power, especially to combat issues like vote splitting.
Well, I wanted to go back a little bit because it does sound like at least split ticketing is a manifestation of voter choice, but you see vote splitting as different. But, you know, what's wrong with the voter choosing, you know, making their choice among maybe an array of five candidates who might be somewhat similar?
Absolutely. What I would say to that is, if you look at a population, and you, the population is 90% Latino, and there are 8 Latinos running for mayor and 1 non-Latino, everyone knows the 1 non-Latino probably has the best chance of winning. And anecdotally, you go to a community, people see that, right? It sometimes is weaponized. So Center for Election Science has done a lot of work with the city of St. Louis. St. Louis is pretty close to being half white and half black. And what would happen in the past in these elections is there would be multiple black candidates who ran, and there was a history of finding and maybe even paying candidates to run that were black to split the vote even further to help the white candidates. This happens all the time. There's a very famous example in Florida where they found someone and put him on the ticket who had the exact same name as one of the candidates to try to steal the vote further. So one, it can be kind of manipulated. The second thing, vote splitting leads to this thing called the center squeeze effect. So what does that mean? The center squeeze effect is when there are multiple candidates who are moderate and one candidate who's a partisan fire breather, the advantage goes to the hyper-partisan person. So in primaries, that's where the ingredients that we're talking about for vote splitting are most likely, right? There's lots of people, they're all kind of the same, and you can only pick one. And in all these races, you know, I think a lot of Americans are saying, where are the moderates? Where are the moderates in Congress? What happens is a lot of moderates run for these primaries, and then there's one or two folks that are maybe say, hey, I want to burn it all down. And they'll get 30% of the vote. And all the moderates, the 4 or 5 moderates, will split. They'll get 25, 20, 22. We see this every day. I guarantee if there is someone in Congress and you're like, how the heck did that person get in there? Look at their primary history. Look, you'll see 9 times out of 10, there were multiple people in the race and they didn't get 50% of the vote. So that's one of the other reasons that it's not, vote splitting is not good, is it kind of lowers the bar for the really hyper-partisan people to get in these seats. And then, you know, once they're an incumbent, it's really hard for them to lose.
Understood. So the way you describe that, that sounds like that happens somewhat organically. But are there cases where there's like organized efforts to get people to vote a certain way in a crowded race? Or does it mostly happen organically?
Part of your question, Mary Jo, is how common is this? And two, is like, it didn't necessarily used to feel this way. I think a lot of people would argue that. I would point to primaries, because primaries are a big deal in the United States for president, for Congress, for Senate. You have to remember the 1800s, first half of the 20th century, there were these gatekeepers who said, when someone who was maybe not ready to run for Congress said, I want to run, someone would put an arm around him and say, no, we're going to find you another seat, right? We're going to find you a city council or something like that. The parties traditionally had that gatekeeper role. And also the media. The media could say, pay attention to these folks, they're legit. Don't pay attention to these folks, they're not legit. Since 2010 to 2020, in key primaries throughout the United States, we've seen an absolute explosion in the number of candidates. It's risen 40%. Why has it risen 40%? You have the internet. You don't have these traditional gatekeepers to say, oh, I'm the one who controls the money, you have to go through me. Or I'm the one who gives you attention, you have to go through me. What has happened is a lot of people feel like they can run for these offices, and they don't have as many people telling them no as they used to. On one hand, that's great. That's awesome. There's a lot of people who would have been in marginalized communities who have not had the opportunity because of these gatekeepers. On the other hand, you're seeing races with 5, 10, 20, 25 candidates. There's one congressional race this year that has 21 candidates in it in another state. What choice do you have when there's 21 candidates? The voter's ability to influence the election with every new person also goes down, right? If it's 2, great. It's going to be 50-50. But once it's 3, 4, 5, it starts to become a crapshoot. And that's the complete opposite of what election should be. It shouldn't be a lottery. You know, it should be, what did people want? And we could clearly see that.
I just wanted to add to that point. We did a study in the 2022 primaries, and we compiled all of the statewide congressional and state legislative primaries. And almost 11% of those primaries included a non-majority winner. And as we kind of dug into those details, there was this huge prevalence of vote splitting, and it changed significantly based on that level of the election. And so to your question about, like, why is this bad? You end up with elected officials that are elected without the support of the electorate, right? And so that goes into the conversation about the individual voter feeling like there's a kind of a loss of faith in the voting system and that their vote doesn't matter. And so that impacts, of course, voting turnout and then the quality of candidates and then having candidates that do represent your interests in elected offices. And so while it's prevalent on every level of elections, it's something that isn't widely addressed, and it cannot be addressed in the current system in which we vote.
Earlier, you had referenced approval voting. That's a term that I don't think is in the common parlance. Can you talk about how that works and who's using it?
Yeah. So approval voting is a alternative voting method that's currently used in Fargo, North Dakota. It's also used in St. Louis, Missouri. And approval voting isn't complex. It could actually be completed within the current voting system. It's really just a flip of the switch where the votes can essentially go into overdrive so that you can select more than one candidate. So it's not a complex reform. I think it's a great first step to reform. It's easy to tally. It's really just simple addition. And let's say that you like, you know, 2 candidates. You can select both of those candidates. And in a way, none of the ones that you don't like. It removes some of that, the data around the vote splitting and around having to just rank, you know, all of these candidates, the 21 candidates you'd have to rank. So approval voting is really, really easy. And so it really is just a way to reform and I think put a little bit more power into the voters. The one thing that I really like about approval voting is that it changes how candidates campaign, right? They don't have to just stay in a district and play the map. They have to come to communities and talk to all different types of voters and understand the issues that are really relevant to them, because it's all about building consensus, that they need consensus approval in order to be elected. And so we lobby and advocate for approval voting to be utilized throughout the elections. And we are just one of many reforms that exist in this space.
How is it different from ranked choice voting?
Yeah, so ranked choice voting is again another different type of reform. And if I think about ranked choice voting, the burden really is on the voter and voting education, right? So you have to know enough about each candidate to be able to put them in order between 1 and 8. If there's 8 candidates in the field, so it's not simple. It's also very expensive for elections administrators to manage and to run. And sometimes those results go into an instant runoff. And there are states that are already littered with runoffs. The other thing about ranked choice voting that could be problematic and that what we've seen is that the goal of ranked choice voting is to get consensus by getting 50%, right? So a candidate would have 50% of the vote, and you do this by multiple rounds. But that means that there's some folks that their vote won't actually count, right? If their third choice is the choice that ends up getting the majority of their votes put over just to get them over that 50% threshold. And so it slows down elections, which is also problematic as we look at the confidence in our elections. So it could take many days to calculate. We've kind of seen that in New York. And again, that trust. And I think it's also quite expensive on candidates to run as well. And so we don't advocate for ranked choice voting. It is used in places like Alaska, but those are the major differences if I was to kind of pinpoint the difference between approval voting and ranked choice voting.
Is this approval voting most effective in a primary situation? How does that play out in a general election, especially if you're running on a party ticket and the goal is to have the Democratic candidate, the Republican candidate, the Green Party candidate?
This is a question we get a lot. Should it be in primaries or should it be in the general election? I say, why not both? But primaries are where it's clearly where we could do the most good, probably the fastest. So there's a Democratic nominee and a Republican nominee from the primaries. Independents can participate in each one, but nominally, the parties are picking their nominee. That doesn't have to change. That's also why we like approval voting. Nothing else has to change to do approval voting. If you had the Republican nomination for governor or Congress, you could use approval voting to pick that nominee pretty quickly. Just whoever gets the most votes. The other question we get is the general election. I don't know about you, but every time I've ever voted for president, there's been more than two people on that race. And especially Arizona, what was the big talk until Sinema dropped out was, oh, what's going to happen, right? Because obviously Gallego and Sinema shared some similarities. And it was pretty clear that that was going to help whoever the Republican was. So these independents are, what unfortunately is happening is that they're being what's called spoilers. And it's the spoiler effect when somebody is similar and just enough to get just enough votes, where in reality, if it's a two-person race, Team A would win. But once it's a three-person race, Team B would win because A and C steal votes from each other. It is really impactful. And if you ever noticed, the popular vote for president, no one ever gets 50% of the vote. There's not even 50% in the popular vote. So even the presidency, and even for Senate, and even for House, you'll see that there's always more than two candidates. Well, if there's one myth I can break today, it's that more times than not, go look at elections, there's more than two candidates, way more than there used to be. We're used to that as Americans. When we think of the word election, we think Republican versus Democrat, but no, 99% of elections are different than that, right? Things are changing and we want to really get that in front of people.
It sounds like to make any of these changes, you would have to go to the very people who were elected by our current system to get them to switch to a system that may not be so favorable for them. So how do you attack that?
Currently, we actually have a bill in the Maryland Senate to bring approval voting, should the jurisdictions choose to have it in Maryland. And so we took a look at our data and, you know, the areas and throughout the country that vote splitting is most prevalent in Maryland came up as number five. And so we wanted to at least start our efforts beyond what we've been able to do in terms of ballot initiatives with the legislative initiative in Maryland. And so what we found is that there's a lot of education that we're having to do, not only with the candidates, but also the folks that run our elections, so the elections directors and officials, about how approval voting works, how it is different from ranked choice voting, which they had education on that, and the cost and the expense of it, right? And so we are very low cost reform. It's just, you know, allowing overrides when it comes to the voting machines. But there is this component of voter education, right? So our first hurdle was to educate folks that we could actually change the way that we vote, right? The way that we cast our ballot. That was our first hurdle. And the second hurdle was to talk about approval voting in a way that I think allows candidates to understand the wants and desires of the electorate, and having an opportunity for voters to feel like they're making the biggest impact, that their vote, their individual vote is powerful, and that they are able to vote for candidates that represent them in their communities. And I think you could see that very clearly in Maryland. We are also looking at Ohio and California, as we've got multiple polls there, not only to talk about vote splitting, but the impacts that it has on how people run, right? And so we've been able to continue to lobby and advocate for our efforts. And we do hope that we'll have several states within the next few years that would adopt approval voting, just to give the voters, I think, a lot of their power, their voting power back. If we don't address it, vote splitting will continue to be prevalent, especially in minority communities. So in a way, the current system will move into disenfranchising the vote. And we want to start to counter that as much as possible.
Is Arizona on your horizon anytime soon?
It's on our watch list. And so one of the conversations I had yesterday is around Arizona being a swing state and understanding what that means, right? And so not only having additional polling and research, but being able to have conversations with candidates, especially candidates that have lost their races, which quite a few have lost their races this year due to vote splitting. And so we're having those conversations to talk about what went wrong. And so, yes, we are looking into Arizona. We are working with grassroots organizations to educate them about approval voting and collaborating through partnerships to have additional research dollars, as well as interests into Arizona elections and the desires of Arizona voters.
Thank you so much. This has really been educational and eye-opening. If our listeners would like to follow you on social media, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can tap in with us at electionscience.org, literally everywhere. And so we'd love to be able to connect with you.
That is it for this week, Gaggle listeners. Do you have questions about today's episode or topics you'd like us to cover on the show? Well, send us a message at 602-444-0804. Or a voice memo to thegaggle@arizonarepublic.com. That's all one word, all spelled out. This episode was edited and produced by Kaylee Monahan, with production assistance from Amanda Luberto. Episode oversight is by Kara Edgerson, and our news direction is from Kathy Tulamello. Our theme song and music comes from Universal Production Music. Never miss an episode of The Gaggle by subscribing to us wherever you listen. And if you learned something new today, be sure to share this episode with your friends. You can also leave us a review, and please rate us 5 stars. You can follow The Gaggle on social media at AZC Podcasts. And I'm at Mary J. Pitzel, that's P-I-T-Z-L. The Gaggle is an Arizona Republic and azcentral.com production. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.